Hey everybody, welcome back to the Treatment Free Beekeeping Podcast. This is episode 52 with Tony Troyes, and he is going to be asking me some questions today about grafting and splitting and expansion model beekeeping and doing all the stuff we like to do as treatment free beekeepers to get out ahead of mites and other diseases, give the bees the opportunity to outbreed these things, give them the opportunity to develop the traits necessary to survive, or at least enough chances to find the correct mix of traits that's going to let them survive. So before we get to that, announcements as usual. This show is brought to you by the patrons at patreon.com/TFB. If you want to support treatment-free beekeeping and my work here in the podcast and the Facebook group and all the other fun stuff we do, navigate on over to patreon.com/TFB and become a patron. Patrons support this stuff. This is how this all happens. So thank you to the patrons. I have now started putting the patrons' names in the credits of the YouTube videos that I do. So if you check out my YouTube page, Treatment Free Beekeeping, I think you can just, you'll find it. I'm sure you're an internet person. You'll figure it out. You can find, if you want to find out who those people are, see who supports the show, or just check out the videos, because there's some cool videos, and I've got more videos that I haven't posted yet. I need to be posting. I haven't posted them yet. Also, of course, the Facebook group, that's where most everything we do happens. That's over at facebook.com/treatmentfreebeekeepers, and, oh, it's groups/treatmentfreebeekeepers, sorry. And also we have a forum if you're not a Facebook person, because let's face it, there are quite a few people out there who are not Facebook people, and we want you to still be involved in the community. So check the forum out at forum.tfbees.net. Once again, I'm forgetting stuff, so I'm just going to not talk about it and we'll get straight to the show. Anthony, welcome to the podcast. Good to have you with me today. You'd gotten a hold of me wanting to talk about, what'd you want to talk about?
I want to talk about expansion model beekeeping and the grafting, how to graft queens. That's something I'm getting ready to do, but I don't know anyone that knows how to do it, so I need some assistance from you on that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, let's start where we usually start, which is introduce yourself and tell us about your beekeeping experience.
Yeah, sure. Okay, so you can call me Tony. I started keeping bees, I think it's been 5 years. Could be six, but I think it's five years ago. Caught a swarm and just kept letting the bees swarm. I never treated them. Fed them a little bit here and there, but essentially built up the population by just letting them swarm and then catching the swarms. And now I'm interested in expanding the population quicker and a little more efficiently, steering it a little better. And I think that can be done with splits and doing this queen grafting and stuff. Oh, and I'm a top bar beekeeper and build my own hives and stuff. So yeah, that's the gist of it. I'm in North Carolina, up in the mountains, just outside of Asheville.
Okay. All right. So my method is built around Langstroth hives, which is not a problem. We can make some adjustments for top bars, but
certainly
you build your own hives, so building some extra equipment shouldn't be a problem.
No, not a problem.
Well, let me just go through my queenwrite method. I have heard from one or two people who have talked about using the same method with a top bar hive. You do have to build a division board with a queen excluder on it, so I'm sure you can pull that off.
And this is for grafting we're talking about?
Well, it's not specifically for grafting, it's for raising the queens. You can also, my method is to do queen right cell building, but you can also do queenless cell building, which would be a bit simpler, but at times can be a little bit more volatile.
Okay. Can you define them in a few different terms for me, the queen right versus the other one?
Right. So typically a commercial beekeeper who makes queens for sale will use a queenless cell starter. And what that means is that they're going to take these grafted larvae and put them into a queenless hive, which has been stocked with plenty of nurse bees. And so those nurse bees, realizing that they don't have a queen, are going to do all they can to turn all of those queen cups with larvae in them into queen cells. And then later on, the beekeeper will either continue using a queenless cell builder by splitting those cell bars up. You can start, if you make 50 grafts or something, you can start them that way. If you leave those 50 grafts on one hive to be raised up into full queens, a lot of them are going to be rejected because the bees don't need that many. Right, so you have to manipulate them to make more, and you can do that by spreading those queen cells out amongst other hives. And then from there, you go ahead.
Yeah, so question. I've been wondering, like, if you have, let's say you got, 10 queen cells or whatever, and you don't really need to put them anywhere, is there some, way to preserve them? Like, can you rig up some situation where you can have a bunch of queens, in a hive together? I understand if they're mated queens, they won't sting each other, right?
They will. If you put mated queens into one hive, they will try and kill each other. The way that you can do that is called a... Oh, my brain's slipping right now. I forget the term exactly. Excuse me. But the idea is that if you create a queenless nucleus hive and then put a bunch of caged queens in there together, the bees won't really know which of those queens is theirs or the right one, and so they'll feed all of them. If you try to do that with a queenright hive and try to store other caged queens in there, they'll kill them, even through the cage.
Got it. Okay.
What is the name of that called? Queen bank. That's what it is, a queen bank.
Oh, queen bank. I've heard that term. Yeah, for sure. I've heard that.
Right. So you you take a box full of queen cells that are all queens that are all caged and add a bunch of bees, those bees will feed all those queens. And then as time goes on, because you don't have any queens laying new eggs and making new bees in that hive, you'll have to keep restocking it. But you can, once those queens are mated and have ripened and started laying, once you put them in the queen bank, they can stay in there almost indefinitely.
Okay, so that sounds like a procedure. You'd have to take the queen cell, put it into a queenless hive so that it can mature and mate. Then you'd have to locate her and put her in a cage and then in the queen bank. Would that be the procedure?
That's correct.
That's a lot of work. Holy moly. Okay.
It is. And it's typically only used by commercial beekeepers who are selling large volumes of queens. And so they're able to keep a bunch of queen banks. And then when they get an order for queens, they can just go out to the queen bank and pop them out rather than having to go out to a hive and find individual queens to sell to people.
Right. Okay. Copy that. Okay.
And then
that's a lot of steps.
Yeah, back to my definitions earlier. What I use is a queen right cell builder. And basically what I'm doing there is kind of tricking the bees into producing supersedure cells. So what I do is I go into a queen right hive. I find the queen. I make sure she's in the bottom of the hive. Then I put a queen excluder over the top of that to make sure she stays down in there. And then I graft... I graft larvae into queen cups, just one cell bar frame, and I put that in the second box above, or I guess the first box above, depending on how you look at it. And I surround that by emerging brood and also pollen and stores so that the nurse bees can feed those new grafts. And because the queen doesn't get to walk around on that cell bar frame, she doesn't spread her pheromones around on there. And so what I believe happens is the bees kind of think that because she's not, because she's not going in this area of the hive that's surrounded by brood, that maybe there's something wrong with her. And because there's already cells there, bees tend to kind of continue doing what other bees have already done. So there's not a, not a whole lot of communication there. So once their cells started, they will continue the cells as long as the conditions are right. And so what I'm doing there is kind of an artificial supersedure. And then before those queen cells hatch out, I'll come in and take them out and put them in queen castles and mating nukes.
Okay. Okay. Those are two different techniques to get to the same finish line, huh?
Yeah, and I realize I'm talking really fast here, so if there's anything you need clarification on, don't hesitate to ask.
Okay. Yeah, so here's a question. Why do you prefer the queen right method?
I prefer the queen right method because I can take one of my good hives that's doing really well, and I can use it to produce queens without interrupting its honey production. So there's no the supers on the hive can go back up on top of the hive and everything will go like normal. And also that method tends to be kind of like a set it and forget it. There's really only three times you need to get into the hive. You need to get into on the first day to put the cell bar in there so that the bees get used to it, and you confine the queen into the bottom box under a queen excluder. And also I like to put an empty frame of comb in there so that when I come back 4 days later, I have exactly the right age of brood to graft from. Excuse me. And then on the 4 days later, I come in, I do my grafting. I graft larvae into the queen cups, put it all back together, depending on the condition of the comb. And for anybody listening along, you can find all this information on my website. I have a full write-up of how to do this whole process, the whole first year.
Okay.
So you can find all the details in there. There's no pictures. Okay. I probably should put some pictures in there, but it's all the information that I'm trying to lay out for you here, all in written format, so you can go back and look through it. And then the third time you get in the hive is 10 days later, you come along and take the queen cells out. And that's when you make your mating nukes. And basically, you just put that hive back together, and it goes back to being a regular hive. And it's a fairly... I've had problems when trying to use a queenless cell builder. I put together this nice queenless cell builder with lots of bees in it and everything, and it basically swarmed. Like, most of the bees just left, like they absconded. And so queenless cell builders can be a little bit volatile.
Okay. Now, the queenless ones, you confine them, don't you? You pack a bunch of nurse bees in and plug the entrances, don't you, for like a day?
It depends on what method you use. If you go to Michael Bush's website, bushfarms.com, / bees, you can read some of the old beekeeping books by Jay, what's his name? Anyway, there's a book by Jay, what's his name? Two books by Jay, what's his name? And
Jay, what's his name?
Yeah, those books are from about 100 years ago, and he talks in depth about that particular method and how to do that. So you can find some really good information there. The books are fairly short, so you can read them in just a couple hours and learn all that information.
Copy that.
I've got a spider running around in my shirt right now.
You got a spider in your shirt?
Yeah.
You might want to take care of that, Solomon.
It's gone now. I got it handled.
Emergency. Okay.
Didn't bite me. It's all good.
So the mating nuke is just, that's just a small queenless nuke that you stick that queen cell into. Yeah?
Right. And you can do that. Okay. If you have, you can pretty much put a ripe queen cell in any queenless hive and have a good chance of the queen hatching out and going out for a mating flight and coming back and starting to lay eggs.
Okay.
If you have, what's your nuke situation? Do you have smaller hive equipment? Can you divide your top bars into multiple nukes in one box?
I got nukes, built nukes this winter. I got a couple queen castles that I built. I got bigger hives, and I got a wood shop that I can go to anytime and a bunch of lumber. So I can build whatever I need, no problem.
Great.
So, yeah.
So what I use is queen castles, which are deep boxes that are divided into three-frame nukes. You can also use five-frame nukes or 10-frame if you just want to use a whole box and make bigger splits with those. You want to have enough bees and comb and such in the box so that the bees are able to keep the brood warm.
Okay.
Queens that get too cold during the process, especially if the queen cell is outside of the cluster at night, a lot of times the queen won't hatch or will hatch late and be unhealthy. So you want to be able to make sure that those... And where are you located?
Just north of Asheville. I'm at 2,300 feet. USDA Zone 6.
Okay. Do you have... You already have drones flying by now, right?
You said swarms?
Drones.
Drones? Oh, we got plenty of drones right now. Lots. Great. Yeah, and it seems like prime swarms have already happened for the most part.
All right, great. Your swarm season has already started. That's good. That's high time for splitting and queen rearing and stuff like that.
Yeah. I set up some swarm traps this year.
Awesome.
And caught a swarm, so that was pretty cool.
Great.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm excited. I didn't think it would work, but you had plenty of people on your show to say that it worked, so I decided to try it.
Yeah, I keep getting messages from Jason Bruns about how many calls he's getting. Apparently his phone's ringing off the hook with swarm calls coming in.
Oh, for real?
Yeah, from all his traps.
Okay, that's great. I got to set up more next year.
Yeah, I've got, this year I set up 24 or 25, far I have 3 swarms caught. It's been a late spring, so we'll see how it goes. But it's been good. I caught one really big one that has just already exploded. It's already up into several supers already.
Oh, wow. Holy moly. Okay. Hey, well, I got a question about swarm sizes. Do feral bees generally have smaller swarms?
In my experience, feral bees do generally have smaller swarms because feral bee cavities are typically smaller than our beehives and usually by quite a bit smaller as well. But there's also, you also can be catching secondary swarms rather than the primary swarm is going to be the nice big one. Like the first one I caught, when I was doing that podcast with Dr. Kefis, that was a big prime swarm. And I was even able to see the queen land on the box and go in, and that hive's the one that's just gone gangbusters. It's been amazing.
Awesome.
But I have another little swarm has landed in this in my swarm trap here on the back porch, and I can tell by the fact that since they've landed, they have not yet started bringing pollen in, which generally indicates that it was a secondary swarm that was headed by a virgin queen. And so that queen's going to take some time to go out and fly and make her mating flights and then come back and start laying. And so it's going to be, you know, a week or maybe a few days more for them to start bringing in pollen and start rearing brood.
Okay, right. So since she's not laying, they have no application for the pollen, I guess.
Right, exactly.
Okay, got it. Okay, that's a good indicator. Cool.
And then,
hey, I got a question about
go ahead.
Nurse bees. So sometimes if I'm doing like a split or something, I'm wondering like if I could shake nurse bees from like a colony that has a lot of bees, like a huge population of bees, if I need some extra nurse bees, shake some nurse bees off one colony into a nuke that's being created from brood that's from another colony, or will they get into a fight if I do that?
Generally, nurse bees aren't going to do much fighting, so you can shake off bees from one hive into another hive without too much problem. You don't want to combine two queen right hives because not always can be a mess. And if you're combining two hives, you want to try and do it in a third box, which is foreign to both hives. Because if you try this sometime, if you take one top bar or frame, as the case may be, out of one hive and listen to it. Listen to the hum. Listen to the buzz. And then take that and stick it right down into another hive or even just an empty box. Within seconds, you'll hear that hum change as the bees start to realize that they're not in the same, they're not home anymore. They're not in the same box. And so once you get that attitude, they're pretty much done fighting at that point.
Okay. Okay. Got it. Doesn't Michael Bush say that you can do a combine? Like a lot of people say you need a piece of newspaper or something to do a combine, but I think Michael Bush, if I remember it right, has said that you can just smoke them heavily, execute one queen or whatever, and then smoke them, and you can do a combine that way. Have you had any experience in that department?
Yeah, you can do that. Excuse me. Yeah, you can do that. Smoking works well, especially for the foreign colony. If you kill the queen and you give them a few minutes, up to half an hour, maybe an hour, to let them realize that they're queenless, they will lose all their fighting instinct. There's various methods you can do. Smoking disrupts a lot of the scent signals that are going on in the hive. So, kind of making them forget that they have or that they were recently queen right. So that works. And the queen's pheromone generally only circulates around the hive for about a half hour or so. So once the queen is gone for a half hour or more, they're going to realize that they're queenless.
Okay, got it. All right. That answers that question. Okay, back to the grafting. Got a question there.
Sure.
It's the larvae that you're grafting. I understand all this is on the website and everything. I'll go check it out in a bit. The larvae that you graft they're like 12 to 24 hours old. Is that correct? I think I've read that.
Right. As young as you can get them after they've turned from an egg into like a little larva kind of in a puddle of royal jelly there. Once you see that puddle of royal jelly, they're good to go. And you can also graft them up to a day or two old as well. They'll start to get bigger, and you'll kind of get the idea of what point they are when they're getting too big. But yeah, as small as you can get them, you know, they're the size of, I don't know, a couple of grains of sand at that point. And try not to flip them over. They need to remain, you know, as you're looking in the cell, they'll be curled in a C shape. And you want them to keep the same side down. If you flip them over, they'll drown.
Oh, weird. Okay.
So what I like to use is the little Chinese bamboo, Chinese grafting tools that you can buy from just about everywhere. They're reasonably cheap. Yeah. They're pretty easy to use. It takes a little practice to get them in, to stick them down in the cell and get them to kind of curl at the bottom of the cell and kind of scoop up the larva, and then when you pull it out, you can take a good look at it. If you can see what you're doing really well, it seems to me to be easier to scoop under the outside of the C, you know, kind of where the larva's back is on the outside of the C. Scoop them up under there, pull them out, take a look at them, make sure you got them on there, and then put them in your cell cup, your queen cup, and then push them off with a little plunger and kind of deposit them on the bottom there.
Okay. And you want the queen cup, the plastic cup, already charged with royal jelly. Is that right? You pre-fill it?
Yeah, you can do that. You don't have to necessarily. I've done it both ways. It seems to be reasonably effective either way. The videos of the pros that I've seen, they tend to do it that way. And you can kind of steal that royal jelly from other larvae that are in the vicinity.
Okay. Okay. Got it. Okay. But you don't necessarily do that. You just grab them and throw them in and hope that they get royal jelly thrown on top of them.
I've done it both ways, and also just moistening it with water as well.
Just water, huh?
Probably the more important thing is to keep the humidity high and keep the temperature right. It's not super important, but I think the keeping the humidity up while you're doing it. So I'll use like a wet towel and lay that kind of over the comb while I'm working on it, just to keep it moist and humid. I've heard I've heard guys talk about grafting queens and leaving and forgetting about it and leaving the larva in the shop for 2 or 3 days and putting those into a hive and still getting queens made out of them. So I don't think it's super vital, the exact process.
Okay. You can just do it on a humid day, huh?
Well, yeah, if you got nice humid weather there, then that's perfect. It's not quite so humid
here. You're in a Mediterranean climate, right?
Yes, I am.
It's dry in the summer?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it rains here, so, yeah.
When I was in Arkansas,
I'll do it on a rainy day.
When I was in Arkansas, I would actually bring them inside in the air conditioning and do it inside.
Okay.
But here, I don't have my bees in my backyard, so I have to do it in the back of the car.
Back of the car?
Yeah, I have a...
Because you got to drive to your bee yard?
Yeah, what I did last year, I had a guy down from Portland to observe and participate. By the way, if anybody's in the area and you want to participate in that sort of thing, just send me a message and I'll tell you when I'm going out to do it, and you can come along and get a free lesson and some practice. So that's fun. Anyway, what I did was I have this hatchback car, and so I just set everything up in the back, and I sat in the back of the car under the hatchback and grafted right there.
Okay, there you go. Your mobile laboratory.
Yeah, and Michael Bush has talked about doing it in his minivan. He had a, I don't know if he still does, but back when I visited him, he had a, like a Dodge or Plymouth, you know, caravan, whatever it was. And he was talking about how he had done it on the dash of his car there.
Okay. Hey, do you know how far Michael Bush is from Omaha, Nebraska, by any chance?
He, let's see, when he was living in Greenwood, he was only like, you know, 20-30 minutes from Omaha, because he was right on the freeway there.
Oh wow!
He is
okay. Yeah,
now,
I'm in Omaha. Yeah, I got family there, so I'd like to meet that guy.
Yeah,
like
he has now moved further down into the southeast corner of Nebraska. I forget exactly what is the nearest town, so he's a little further away than he used to be. But you can get a hold of him. He answers emails, and I'm sure he would love to have you out for a visit or something.
Yeah, that'd be cool. I'm trying to figure out what his bees eat, because all there is in Nebraska is corn. I mean, that's it, corn everywhere. So I'm like, how are those bees getting food, you know?
He was
eating corn pollen.
From what I saw, he was pretty much relying on the fence rows and the forested areas, which you're right, there aren't a whole lot of, but there's between the fields and along the roads and stuff, there were, seemed to be, his bees seemed to be doing okay out there.
Right. Okay. I mean, they must be. So, Okay, cool. You're in Eugene, is that right?
I'm in Medford.
I don't know where that is.
I am like exit 27 or whatever. I forget the exact exit, but I'm like 25 or so miles north of the California border on I-5.
Oh, okay. Okay, I got you. Way south.
So yeah, okay. we have a pretty good Mediterranean climate here. We've just probably had our last rain this last weekend, which I was thinking about going out and doing some grafting, getting that process started, but got down. In fact, my father's grapes, some of the tips of the grapes got frozen. Or maybe not quite frozen, but whatever they did, they got killed off. Maybe it didn't quite get to freezing. So we had a pretty cold night. And usually, if you're still having cold nights, I had in Arkansas had snow while I had grafts in a hive. And I don't think a single one of that batch of queens turned out very well.
Okay.
When it gets that cold, the process just gets stunted and gets messed up.
If you had to give a number, like a threshold, you know, 40 degrees or 45 degrees, what would you say for grafting?
For actually doing it or like overnight?
No, like let's say, you know, the week or two following grafting is what I'm talking about.
If you have a really nice, well-stocked hive that's got a lot of bees in it, and you've got the area where the grafts are, has a lot of brood around it, and make sure there's a lot of bees in there. You can get down, you know, 40 is going to be no problem. Okay. The warmer, the better. You know, it helps the bees be able to keep everything at the right temperature and humidity and make sure those queens get the best of conditions. But a good solid hive, well populated with a lot of bees, is gonna help those cold nights sometimes.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Hey, how often do you think virgin queens get lost when they go out and mate? Is that like a common occurrence, or is that a rarity?
Yes, that is pretty common, and from my experience and from what I understand from other people as well, you'll have a fairly consistent loss rate in a given area, but that loss rate will be different in different areas. So,
That's weird.
Yeah, so it will depend on the local conditions. Maybe if there's a lot of dragonflies around that are out catching bees. Mel Dislacone, when I heard his presentation here 2 months ago, he was talking about he gets about 90% return. I have seen in Arkansas, I saw say 75-80% return. And then this last year, what was my return this last year? It was probably about 75% here this last year. I don't remember the exact numbers. I kept track of it on the day that I did it, but I don't know where I put that information. So it's I think if you're getting above 60 or 70%, you're doing fairly well.
Okay. All right, got it. Okay. Yeah, like I said, I built some queen castles this past winter, and then I set them up and put them to use, and I did 10 or 10 units, or whatever you want to call it, 10 rooms that I put cells into, splits, but I only got 4 queens out of the deal. I'm trying to figure out if maybe there's some other queens in there and I'm just not seeing them. They haven't started laying yet, you know what I'm saying? Or if they got lost and like flew into adjacent rooms or units, whatever you want to call it, and then they got into a fight or something. So I don't know.
That's possible.
But, you know, 4 out of 10, that's dumb. I'm saying, so we'll see. Keep trying next year, I guess.
So how did you set those up? Were those just little queenless splits?
What I did was I took I waited for swarm cells, and then I would just take a bar with some swarm cells on it, and then a bar of pollen, and then a bar of honey, and then that was my my split, I guess you'd call it. And then put that in the queen castle, and then cross my fingers. Oh, I shook some nurse bees in, like a couple bars of nurse bees in each one. So it worked, but I wanted to work better. My goal was to get at least half to take, and I got 40%. Last year was zero when I did a similar thing because I didn't know what I was doing. So I know a little bit more this year at least. So heading in the right direction, I guess.
Well, it's all a learning process. Don't worry about it too much.
Yeah.
That's the easiest way. If you can catch a hive trying to swarm like that, that's the easiest way to get a bunch of splits. As far as why you only got 40%, without seeing the setup, I don't know if I can offer much advice. I would say it is quite possible that queens will the virgin queens are well known for drifting a little bit, not making it back to the right hive necessarily. And so
that was my concern.
Yeah. So you can maybe put different colors of paint around the entrances or point them in different directions, do things like that. The way I have it on my mating nukes is I have one entrance is on the front for the middle nuke, and then the two entrances for the side nukes are on the side. So they're on total different sides of the box. And that seems to work fairly well.
Okay, got it. And yeah, again, somebody might have gotten locked. I don't know.
Yeah, and I don't know exactly what your setup is, how you got all that set up. So, yeah, just look for ways that you can identify the hive to make sure that the queen knows which box she's or which hole she's coming back to if there's multiple nukes in one box.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, there's actually 8 in each castle, so that's quite a bit. So
yeah, that sounds like a healthy one.
Somebody got well. For sure. So how long have you been grafting for?
When did I start grafting? I think Without going back and reading my blog and figuring out the exact year, I think it was 2012.
Okay. And then the first year, how many queens did you get? How successful were you, essentially?
The first year, I without looking at the numbers, I think I grafted 18, and I got like 16 or 17 queens finished out of that.
Dang, dude, okay.
Yeah, the first year was like phenomenally successful, which was really encouraging to me. That's not the case for everybody, you know. I'm sure I'm the outlier. And then out of that, I probably got 12 new queens out of it.
Okay. Okay, got it. And then the other ones, what, they just didn't hatch, or what do you think happened?
Sometimes they won't hatch. Maybe 1 out of 10 to 1 out of 20 or so won't hatch, won't emerge. Okay. Other ones will be, sometimes some of them seem like they never go out on their mating flight. They just never go, and so they never, like, I'll open the hive and I'll look at them and they just don't seem like they're not plumping up. You know, when a queen's mated and comes back and starts doing her thing, she'll get bigger. And it just seems like they stay the virgin size, you know, that smaller size with the narrower abdomen. One I remember, I know was my fault, cause I was inspecting the hive before the queen was ready and she got smashed between some comb and she didn't die immediately, but she was damaged. And so that one failed. So I like to not look at them once I put the cell in the mating nuke. I like to give them, you know, maybe 2 weeks before I look. So it gives them plenty of time to emerge out, harden up her shell so she's not fragile, go out and mate and come back and start laying eggs, hopefully. But even then, sometimes they might not lay eggs for a while. So, you know, give them a chance, see what happens.
Okay. Do you use queen cell protectors with your grafts?
I have used those little orange things that I think JZBZ makes that
it's like a cage.
Yeah, a little cage that goes, but still allows. I haven't used the hair rollers, like the thing that captures the queen after she hatches out.
Right.
So I have used those. They seem to work just fine. Say again?
You just grab the queens with your fingers?
Yeah, when I capture them. I mean, they're a little fragile, but I mean, if you can practice by picking up drones. So they're not as fragile as they seem. Once they're emerged and fully hardened and ready to go, as long as you're not squeezing their abdomen, they're fairly durable. You know, I mean, you can kind of play around with a drone in your hands and kind of get used to them. And it's good to do that. It's good to practice because. Right. I find myself, like, if I'm too nervous about picking up a queen and, you know, my fingers are shaking or whatever, I'm actually more likely to damage her than if I just do the thing and be confident about it, even if I'm a little rougher than I'd like to be.
Okay. Ninja style.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Righteous. All right, well, I got my my queen cups all mounted up on a top bar frame and stuff, and I got my grafting tool and everything, and I've just been waiting to talk to you to get some further details before moving forward on this thing. But I think I'll have to check out your look at your website and see if I can get some more information there, see if I can get on this thing.
Well, I'm glad we got to talk. I'm sorry we couldn't put together a time this last week, but this week, I mean, my wife and the kids are out off doing extracurricular activities. So I was like, hey, let's do it right now. And, you know, so here we are.
Right. There you go. That works. Yeah. I can take some pictures and stuff of what I'm doing here. And, if it works, I'll send you some photos or something.
Yeah. And I can post those along with this episode of the podcast and people will be able to see that. This one will be episode 52, which, hopefully will be out later this week or maybe the following week. So yeah, if you send me some pictures, then I can put that along with this episode and people will know what they're looking at. Cause I'm really curious to see what your hives look like and especially your queen castles. Cause I've heard of people doing queen castles with top bar hives, but I've never seen any.
Yeah. yeah, that's what I did. I wish I had more more queens come back, but I had some at least, huh? 4 out of 10, that's a start. I don't know.
Well, and then even then, it's not necessarily a bad thing, because now you can take those four that are queen right and take the other ones that didn't make it and merge them back together and give them a little boost and get them started a little bit better.
Yeah, that's what I got to do. Yeah, for sure.
So, I mean, it's
I'll do that.
Basically one hive that you turned into a four-way split, which is not too bad.
That's pretty good. Yeah. Success to a degree.
And it's, a lot of it really is about practice. It's like being able to spot the queen. Some people are just good at it immediately and it happens. But most people, like anything, you learn how to do it and then you do it and do it and do it and do it. And then you get better at it. And you may not realize exactly the things that you're doing to get better at it. As a concept I've been playing with lately, I'm kind of tentatively calling, I was thinking about it this morning. Maybe educated ignorance is like you know what you're doing for the most part, but you're not terribly concerned with the details. You're just kind of expecting things to fall in together. And this was kind of designed around treatment-free beekeeping, because we know that the bees are able to survive on their own and deal with mites and things. But the best way to do that is to let them do it on their own without meddling too much. So we know that there's things going on, you know, we're educated about it, but exactly what's going on, we're remaining voluntarily ignorant and letting them do their things. And that goes for a lot of learning processes. You know, like riding a bicycle, you can only learn so much about riding a bicycle from a book. You really got to get out there and get your muscle memory working and get your body flowing and getting everything together. And then you can't even really explain it, because it's probably a lot of it's nonverbal.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Muscular. You gotta feel it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's the case with, just gardening in general and like permaculture and stuff. It's just like, you know, you can read books all day, but until you actually go out and do it and make some mistakes, you're not actually going to learn how to do it. And you're not actually going to learn what really works in your climate. So
yeah,
you got to get outside and get her done, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah. For sure.
Well, is there anything else you want to talk about? Any more questions you have?
I'm sure as soon as we hang up, I'll have like 30 questions that I forgot to ask you. So
happens all the time. Don't worry too much about it.
Yeah, I know. For sure. I'm sure as soon as I have that grafting tool in my hand, I'll be like, oh damn, I forgot to ask Solomon X, Y, and Z. But I'll just be in touch. I'll let you know what's going on with me and how things are working here with the grafting. Hopefully I have some good news to share with you.
Sure. And as far as grafting itself, like I said, you know, it's just a matter of getting in there and doing it, and you'll kind of get a feel for it over time. And as you get practice, you'll get better and better. And the other thing to realize is that don't be precious with it. Like, these are just, you know, barely more than eggs. You can mess them up and redo them and do them over again and just get a feel for it. You know, don't worry about how hard it is, or just do it and do it and you'll get it. It'll come to you.
Okay. Okay, cool. Yeah. Yeah. There's kind of an unlimited supply of little eggs. So yeah.
Yeah. And maybe nothing will work the first time. Maybe you'll have a complete, it just won't work at all, and you'll have to go back and do it again. And
I'm bracing for that.
Yeah. Well, if you're planning for that, then you'll never be disappointed.
Exactly. Yeah, I set my sights low. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, if I even get a couple to take, I'll at least know that it's possible. So I just got to try it and see what happens.
Well, great. Well, Tony, it's good to hear from you. Thanks for your questions. Yeah. These are questions that I get quite a bit, and so it's good to answer them for people, especially in the future, who are thinking, who are listening to this podcast beyond the year 2017 and are thinking about grafting themselves. So, thanks for all that. And thanks for taking the time to talk to me this evening. And I appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks for having me chit chat on your show, Solomon.
Awesome. Well, that is the end of episode 52. Thank you all for joining me again. Have fun keeping bees, because if you're not having fun, do something else.